Morning, Reality Church. How are you guys doing today? You feeling all right? Feeling good? Listen, welcome. My name is Lance Birch. I'm one of the pastors here at Reality Church. And if this is your first time, from up front, I want to say welcome. We're glad you made the choice to be here. We happen to be on week four of a series called Follow. Really encourage you to go back and look at the first few weeks of this series. We actually got this series from a church in Georgia, North Point Community Church. Andy Stanley preached it. I heard it a couple of years ago and thought it would be a great thing. Just looking for an opportunity to deliver it here. All of our sermon series we do originally, but this one we actually purchased from them. And we've been learning a lot of really cool things throughout this series. The first week we talked about how if you're an unbeliever or you're a sinner, you are not disqualified from being a follower of Jesus. In fact, all of his followers were unbelievers and sinners at the beginning. Every one of them didn't understand who he was or what he was about. And so that is not a disqualification. In fact, it's a prerequisite. And last week we said, what's the end game? What are we going for? Why are we following Jesus? And you know, there's a lot of people that think the end game is to become a better person or maybe to eventually go to heaven. And yet Jesus never connected following him with either one of those. In fact, he connected it all throughout the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, with this faith in God that overwhelms your fear. He was constantly saying, don't be afraid. Read it. I want you to. Go throughout the Gospels. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Fear not. Why are you so afraid? Over and over again. So that's what we've been talking about. And this week, we're talking about the thing that I know has been keeping you up at night. What should Jesus followers wear? Right? That's been, you're like, I know all that stuff, but what should I wear? And that's what we're going to talk about today. And that's very important. It's very important because you can tell what people are following by what they wear. Isn't that true? I mean, let's take a look at a few pictures. For instance, who are these guys following, do you think? They're following the Huskers for like 58 minutes. They're following the Huskers. And so that's really easy. All right, so shout it out to me. Who are these guys following? You didn't shout it. You went like, Iowa. All right, so they're following Iowa. It's not all just sports teams. I mean, people are fanboys of all sorts of different things, right? Check out this guy, right? He's a huge Apple fanboy, and that's what he's kind of. It gets a little difficult here, so if you know it, just shout it out. You can be that know-it-all guy in the class. So who are these people following? Columbia what? Soccer, yeah. Columbia soccer team, yeah, that's who they're following. But it's not just sports and stuff. It's stuff of gravity, too. I mean, you can tell what someone's religion is a lot of times by what they're wearing. Who does this young lady follow? You don't want to shout this one out, do you? No one wants to shout Muhammad at church, I guess. So nobody wants to. Can we shout that? Yeah. And what about these guys? Who do they follow? They follow Buddha, and some of them wearing sunglasses. They look pretty cool, you know. Thought that was cool. These are Buddhist priests. They are Buddhist priests. They had a couple of really good albums in the 80s, I think. Maybe I'm mixing something up. But anyway, what should Christians wear, though? I mean, what should Christians wear? What identifies us out in the community, out in the culture? What should we wear? Because basically we've got, you know, maybe two options. I mean, there's this option. We could go with this if you want to, I guess. And you know, just like, you know, out there, evangelistic, in your face, sort of, I'm on Jesus' team. You know, I believe in Jesus. Yes, I do. I believe in Jesus. How about you? That sort of thing. Or on the polar opposite end of this thing, you can wear your faith in a totally different way. You know, God hates you. Wow. That really makes me want to nudge up to these guys. Tell me about this Jesus that you follow, right? No, it's just, but there's these options, and it might be confusing for you. What does Christianity wear? Let's not even use that word. What does a Jesus follower wear? What should we look like? Because if we get it right, then I think that all those people who think that Christians or Jesus followers should keep their faith private, I think they'd change their opinion. I think if we get this one thing right today, if you get this clear in your mind and you start to live this way, that everybody in our community will want your faith to be very public. They'll want you to go public with your faith in Christ. But if we get it wrong, then, and like so many times I do in my own life, and maybe we do collectively, that's where that comes from. That, why don't you keep your Christianity to yourself? In the New Testament, a guy named Paul, who was basically a missionary, who started churches all throughout Asia, he took a lot of trips, and he wrote letters to these churches and everything, Paul says to us what we should wear as Christians, which ought to make you nervous, because back in those days, they didn't have buttons or zippers, so do with that whatever you want. That was funnier in my head. 9 o'clock hated it too, don't feel bad. Before he was Paul, though, he was Saul of Tarsus. And Saul hated Christians. So what's funny is if you're here right now and you've got a bad taste in your mouth when it comes to Christianity, Saul did too. In fact, he hated them. He tells his story in Acts 26, the book of Acts, chapter 26. And he says, basically, I was a hunter of Christians. I was Saul of Tarsus, Christian hunter, you know. That's what he did. He went and he arrested them and he saw them put to death. He split up families. If you hate Christians or if you've got a bad taste in your mouth when it comes to Christianity, then listen to the teachings of Paul, because he got there before you. He absolutely hated Christians. And then he became one. He became Paul. And he looked at he never got the teachings of Jesus from Jesus, by the way. He didn't hang out with Jesus. He basically interviewed people like Matthew and Peter, and he got the teachings of Jesus from the people who got the teachings from Jesus, okay? So that's how he got them. And when he started listening to this, he started hearing this theme over and over again. And he said, oh, that's what it was about. And so when he taught 22 years later, the church, in this letter that we're going to look at in a second, when he taught the church, he zeroed in on this teaching of Christ. So, and these teachings that he got were from even the very last part of Jesus' life, where Jesus told his disciples, this is what it's all about. He had his disciples together, Jesus, and he was giving them his last words. And last words are very, very important. Judas had already betrayed him, and he just had his closest followers there with him. And Jesus is sitting down with him and talking to him, and he says, I'm about to leave you. And where I'm going, you can't go. I'm leaving you. And that must have just shocked them. And their brains probably froze on that one phrase. You know, I'm leaving you. Or you can't come where I'm going. And then he went on to tell them what I think is his message to us. And a very important one, because it's his last kind of, this is what it's all about. John 13, 34 through 36, Jesus is teaching. And he says, so now, right now, I am giving you a new commandment. Love each other. That doesn't look like a new commandment, does it? That looks like the commandment that we've always known. If you've been to church any length of time, you know we ought to love each other. That ought to be something that we do. And I'm sure the disciples were thinking, that doesn't sound new. And maybe you're thinking, that doesn't sound new. And Jesus is going, okay, yeah, but I'm not finished yet. So be patient. Love each other just as I have loved you. You should love each other. Not the way that you love each other, not the way that you treat each other, not the kindness that you show each other, but the way that I've loved you. And then he probably turns to Matthew and he says, Matthew, when I found you, you were a tax collector. You were despised. You remember that? Everybody, if the Romans weren't there, the people around you would have taken you outside the city walls and stoned you to death. They would have thrown rocks at you till you were dead, Matthew. Now, how did I treat you? Even when you were stealing from people. You remember that? I chose you. And not just to be on the outskirts of my disciples. I chose you to come in to my 12, to be really close to me. I accepted you when you were despised. Everybody hated you. Nathaniel, when you heard about me, Nathaniel, you remember this? When you heard about me, I remember it like it was yesterday, Nathaniel. They told you that this guy from Nazareth was maybe the Messiah. And what did you say, Nathaniel? You said, Nazareth? Can anything good come from Nazareth? You dissed my entire family, Nathaniel. And what did I do? When I saw you, I totally loved you and accepted you. So it's not the way you guys love each other. Peter, you're a fisherman. And I brought you out from a place. You said you were a sinner. You couldn't even be around me. But how did I treat you? You remember that, guys? And I'm sure he went around. Everybody in there had a story about how Jesus had loved them. And he says, what if you loved other people? Not the way that you normally love other people. What if you love people the way that I loved you? Isn't that a great question for you to ask, for me to ask? What if I loved people not the way that I normally do it, but the way that I've been loved, just as I have loved you? You should love each other. If you forget everything else I say, guys, love each other, not the way that you would, but the way that I do. Your love for one another, he goes on to say, your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. That disciples word is the word that Jesus used over and over again for his followers. He didn't call them Christians. That word wasn't even around yet. He said, you're my disciples. By this, by what? By the love that you show each other. The way you treat one another is your calling card. The way that you treat one another is the secret sauce. Notice what it's not. It's not how many Bible verses you have memorized. It's not how many times you go to church. It's not how much money you give to a nonprofit or a church. It's not, you know, that you've attended a ton of Bible studies. It is this, the secret sauce. The proof is how you treat each other. That's an amazing teaching from Jesus that so many times we forget. Instead of doing it this way, we think, well, I've memorized a lot of verses. I go to church all the time. I know all the words to the songs. You know, I'm in life group. I serve in a ministry. I did the big live. So I ought to be able to treat you people however I want. You know, if I could just figure out a way to please Jesus, then I could forget about you. And as long as I'm just pleasing Jesus, I'm checking these boxes, I'm doing the right stuff, then I ought to be able to treat you however I want. But Jesus says, no, this is the proof. How you treat people, how you treat your waiter this afternoon, how you treat the person who doesn't realize that the light turned green and you realized it. That's when this comes out or doesn't. So your love for one another will prove to the world that you're my disciples. And Simon Peter, after all this incredible teaching on love, and what we're supposed to do and what we're supposed to be about, and Jesus' last word, and the gravity in the room was you could just feel it. He says, Lord, where are you going? What? Yeah, you remember when you said you were going somewhere and we couldn't go? Where is that? We're kind of wondering. Isn't that just so us? Jesus is trying to teach them something, and I know that they skipped ahead, and maybe you've skipped ahead. Yeah, love each other. Okay, I get it. Love each other. We're supposed to love each other. But what about this stuff? What about where you're going and how do we get there and all that stuff? Here's why this is so important for you and for me. The same reason it was important for them. Because we always tend towards religion, the do's and the actions and the what are we supposed to do next. And the gravitational pull of religion is always toward rule keeping and away from relationship building. The gravitational pull for you and for me is always what we can do. Why? Because we can control that. If this and this and this and this is what I'm supposed to do to please Jesus, well then just, you know, set me free. I'll go do that. Because it's much easier, isn't it, to read your Bible and to go to a Bible study and to go to church and to sing songs and even to give than to love difficult people, isn't it? Isn't it easier to show up than to show what Jesus' love looks like when you've got difficult people in your life? How many of us in this room, when I say difficult people, it's not just an idea, it's a name, right? It's a name. You know, everyone in here is like, oh yeah, that person. It's so much easier for you to sit right here and to nod in agreement, maybe even take some notes, and then to go to life group, and then unpack it for yourself, you know. This is what it means for me. Then to go to work on Monday and love that person. And yet, Jesus says, that's the proof. That's it. See, the gravitational pull for you and for me is to fill in these blanks, do this, do that, and that person has nothing to do with it. That's why some of you guys left the church. That's why some of you guys are giving church one more shot, because the people in your life that know the most Bible are the meanest people you know. And that has driven so many people away from Christianity. And that's why Jesus says, love one another. Not the way that you love each other, but the way that I love you. Love each other that way. It's the proof. It's your calling card. It is the secret sauce. That's what makes the whole thing attractive. And if we get that, then nobody's going to want your faith to be private. They're going to want your faith to be public if we live it the way that Jesus teaches us to live it. But the gravitational pull is always there for me. And here's what we do. We start to discipline ourselves. Well, you know, if I'm going to please Jesus, I need to be disciplined. I read my Bible, do my soap study. I need to do my devotional time. I need to do all of these things. And we go and we towards discipline, and we confuse it with discipleship. It's easy to confuse discipline with discipleship. Here's how you know you're a disciple. Here's how you know you're a follower or a learner or an apprentice of Jesus. You're growing in love for God, and you're growing in love for other people. Even that person whose name came up in your mind, that person who's difficult. And you're like, that'll never happen. You don't know them. You're right, I don't know them. But I've got one myself, right? And so do you. We all do. Here's it. You should love them in a way that it almost surprises you. You should look at yourself in the mirror a year from now and go, how did I get there? This person was my sworn enemy. This person has nothing good to say about me. This person at every moment wants me to fail. And yet I'm growing in my love for them. How is that happening? Well, because you became a follower. You became a disciple, not just someone who was a disciplined person, not just someone who knew the right stuff or knew the right verses or went to church. You became a follower, and it changed the way, not that you believed, but the way you behaved towards somebody. It changed your actions. It changed how you felt about them. Wow, can you imagine that in your own life? How would that change you on the job, in your family, in those relationships that are so strained? But it's easy for us to confuse discipline with discipleship. It's easier to go to church, pray, even read your Bible than to love someone who's really difficult to love. Well, Paul takes all of this teaching that Jesus gave us, and he, about 20 years later, writes a letter to a church that he kind of started in Colossae, and it's the letter to the Colossians. And remember, this is 20 years later. So whenever you attend that freshman English class, seniors, and they tell you that the myths of Jesus, you know, germinated for hundreds of years before anyone ever wrote anything down, that's baloney, okay? They just don't know what they're talking about. Don't buy that. This guy was writing, Paul was writing 20 years later, and he was talking about Jesus as God, by the way. This was not something that was decided by a council. Jesus pretty much said it, I am God. He equated himself with God. So that's just an aside. That's for free. But Paul is writing to the Colossians, and he's saying this. He's taking that love one another idea, and he gives it a really good description. So this is what he says. Since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, he's talking to this church, might as well be talking to us because this is who we are as believers. So he's writing to believers, to Christians. Since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourselves. There it is. Put on these clothes. You must clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. That looks like somebody I want to be around. Do you know people like this, by the way? That you feel comfortable around them, that you don't have to prove anything to them. Jesus is saying, through Paul here, that this is what the love one another looks like. Tenderhearted mercy, there's a word for that. The actual word in the Greek there is two words. Compassion is what it's translated in most of your Bibles, compassion. But it literally means bowels of compassion. That's attractive, right? Bowels of compassion. Basically, it means, and when they said heart, they didn't really say heart in the New Testament in the first century. When you loved someone, you loved them from your bowels. That's so romantic. We rarely hear songs about that anymore. You know, and try that with your sweetheart tonight. You know, I just love you with my bowels. Or don't try that. I don't think that'll work out for you. But basically, it makes sense, right? Because when you fall in love, there's that, you know, stomach feeling that you get. It just kind of feels empty or kind of not at ease. And it's just those deep emotions from your gut, you just feel for them. That's what compassion means. When you see something on TV or you hear a story about somebody, just from the deepest part of who you are, you just feel for them. And you almost are with them in that. That's what compassion means. It's this deep feeling for someone and what they're going through. He also says kindness. Kindness. This is kind of helpful. Kindness is lending your strength to someone when they're weak, in their area of weakness. They are weak right there, and you are going to lend your strength, yourself, to them in their moment of weakness. That's what we should look like. Humility. Humility, which is not thinking really low of yourself. It's actually seeing yourself accurately and seeing the person that you're dealing with accurately as a created being of God, as this potential child of God, as someone who's broken just like you. And you see them and yourself accurately. When you're walking in humility, it doesn't matter whether you're talking to the CEO of some major corporation or, you know, or someone who's working for you. You approach them in the exact same way because you see yourself the way God sees you. See yourself as someone who's broken, who's in need of love, but also who is deeply loved by God. So when you look at somebody, even the difficult to love people, you walk in humility and you treat them the exact same way because we are all right there at that same level with God. We see ourselves accurately as deeply loved and in need of forgiveness as everybody else in this room. That's what humility means, seeing myself accurately, seeing myself correctly in relationship to God and how he feels about me and the other person. And then there's gentleness. It means taking into consideration their strength rather than responding with your strength. We're all strong in certain ways, aren't we? Some of us are physically strong. Some of us are really good arguers. And when you get into those conversations, how many of you guys just go for the win? I mean, you don't even care whether you're right or wrong. How many of you guys, you just, and I'm talking to guys because I just feel that happens a lot. You just, you know, you go for the win. And even when you know you're wrong, if they say something grammatically incorrect or logically, you know, kind of attack, you can attack it. You just go for it. It doesn't matter. It's not about the relationship anymore. It's about being right. And you don't deal with gentleness because you're strong in that area. It's gentleness is taking your area of strength and choosing not to use it. Instead, being gentle. You could win, but you're not going to because something else is more important. And patience. Patience basically means going their speed, not your speed, pacing with them. Have you guys ever walked along with a toddler in the mall, you know, like holding their hand? Or, you know, in the park or something like that, and then you realize, I'm not walking with you, I'm dragging you. Because you need to pace with them. You need to go their pace, their speed. If you know somebody right now that's doubting God, you know, maybe, you know, drop the megaphone and pace with them. Stop telling them, you know, all the truth that they need to hear, but pace with them and listen to them. Listen to their doubts. Listen to why they're skeptical. Be patient with them. They're probably not going to change their worldview over lunch. But if you do life with them and you show them, you know, compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. Who knows what might happen? Jesus goes on to say, make allowances for each other's faults. In other words, you guys, you're not perfect. They're not perfect. Instead of picking them out, do you know people who know everybody's faults? You know, when they leave the room and then they say, you know what her problem is, or you know what his problem is. They know everybody's faults except their own. Make allowances for the fact that we've all got blind spots. I heard statistic that was disturbing to me. Everybody has 3.4 blind spots. I don't know what that means. I actually asked somebody what one of mine was, and that's a scary prospect. But make allowance for other people's faults because you've got your own. Not only that, but forgive. Forgive anyone who offends you. Cancel the debt. How many of you guys are carrying around old debt from relationships that have long passed? I mean, you can think back to middle school. You can think back to high school. You know, they never said they were sorry, or, you know, I can't believe that they did this to me. And you're carrying around that old debt. And Jesus is saying, cancel the debt. You're going to be free if you do that. Cancel that debt. Forgive anyone who, how many people? Anyone. Who? Everyone. Anyone who offends you. I saw a post on Facebook the other day. It said, something happened in America and magically we're offended by everything now. Well, Christians, maybe the time has come for us to just drop that and say, I can't, you know what? You're not going to offend me because I deserve everything coming my way. I'm going to make allowances. I'm going to forgive anyone who seemingly has offended me. I'm going to cancel that debt. And remember, why should I do that? Remember, the Lord forgave you. Your debt has been canceled. Every believer in here, you've been forgiven, so you must forgive others. If we just live that one, we change the world. But then he goes on and he says, above everything else, above all, clothe yourselves, Paul says. Put on these clothes. Clothe yourselves with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. Clothe yourselves in love. Literally, over all these, love, which is the bond of perfection. So, every day, we get up and we say, I'm a believer, what should I wear? Well, compassion, humility, kindness, forgiveness, love, you know, patience, gentleness. Those are the things that I should wear every day. And you look at that list, and if you're like me, and you go, how am I going to get anything else done if I got to do that? I mean, how is anybody in my office ever going to do anything if that's who I am? No one's ever going to do what I ask because I'm compassionate and I'm kind and I'm gentle. And I'll never get anything accomplished if that's me. But then think, the guy who wrote this, he accomplished more than you and I ever will. He started dozens of churches all over Asia. He hopped in a little sailboat and took multiple missionary journeys, was shipwrecked, snake bit. He defended himself in front of kings. He took his own defense. He changed, literally changed the landscape of faith and undercut the Roman Empire. And Christianity exploded. Why? He wrote 40% of the pages of the New Testament. The guy who says, this is the way, these are the clothes we should wear. That's what it should look like. So it's possible. It's not abandoning the real you, by the way. It's about running the real you through this filter. Because everybody always talks about authenticity. We always talk about authenticity. We want to be authentic. Hey, sometimes authenticity is overrated. Prisons are full of authentic people. What we really want is authenticity that's run through this filter of who Jesus is. Who is Jesus in me? Compassion, humility, kindness, forgiveness, love, gentleness, patience. Jesus says this is the calling card. This is what it looks like. And you know, it's not about Bible memorization, but Bible memorization can kind of bring this about if you have it the right way, if you do it the right way. It's not about church attendance, but if you attend church and you actually apply it to your life, then maybe these things are going to start to characterize your life. It's mainly about saying, Jesus, what did you do? Jesus, what did you say? I'm going to listen to you, and I'm just going to say yes. I'm going to follow you. So in the morning, before you leave your house, clothe yourself. Mentally, put these on. Put them on. And I want you, I'm going to give you a little tool to memorize it. I want you to say with me, I'm going to say Chick-fil-A Jeep. Just say Chick-fil-A Jeep. 1, 2, 3, Chick-fil-A Jeep, okay? This is going to help you memorize what I just told you. Chick-fil-A Jeep. Compassion, humility, kindness, chick, forgiveness, love, filet, gentleness and patience. Jeep, Chick-fil-A. Someone clapped for that. Thanks, guys. That's awfully kind of you. This is our follower. So when you get up in the morning, hop in the Chick-fil-A Jeep and go to work. When you get, you know, when you walk into the living room and everybody, it's chaos in your family, you know, get in your Chick-fil-A Jeep. Before you start talking, think this way: compassion, humility, kindness, forgiveness, love, gentleness, patience. I need all of these things in order to be wearing the right stuff. I can make my religion about a lot of stuff. I can make my faith in Jesus about what I do or what I don't do, or what's in my fridge or what's not in my fridge, or what my language is, or what I say or what I don't say. But what if I made my Christianity, if I built it around what Jesus said to build it around? I promise you, if we do this, then nobody's going to want your faith to be private. They're going to want it to be everywhere. Everywhere. And this is attractive. This actually draws people to Jesus. It draws them to who he is because it looks like him. I mean, you might say, you know what? This doesn't come naturally for me. Right. Of course it doesn't. This only comes supernaturally, right? This doesn't come natural to anybody. But clothes don't come naturally. Right? And you put them on. Thank goodness you did. You know, sometimes we want you to put more on, but that's okay, especially at amusement parks. I don't know what that's about. I don't know. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. It's something about amusement parks. It's like, I think I'm going to wear the bikini today. I don't know. Some of you are laughing. Some of you aren't. You've had that experience. It's moving on. There are times in life when this is going to be so incredibly difficult. And you guys, you thought of those names earlier. You know, you thought of who that person is. Maybe it's just a situation where you need to put on compassion and kindness and gentleness. But the reason that Paul instructed us in this is because he knows it's not natural. Therefore, as God's chosen people, put on these things, clothe yourselves. Because we've, you know, remember those two options? Do we really want to go there? Do we really want to play one of those roles? You know, either it's the in-your-face, you know, all the time, full-on, making a point about, you know, who Jesus is role, or the God hates you role. See, both of those ideas are designed to make a point. And they do make a point. And, you know, they make a point, but we're not here to make a point. We're here to make a difference. And this makes a difference. It actually would change things. Think about the difference it would make if you clothed yourself with compassion, humility, kindness. If you clothed yourself with love, with forgiveness and love. If you clothed yourself with gentleness and patience, how would that change your marriage? How would that change your work environment? How would that change what this community, what the world thinks about Christianity? And that's not the point. The point is, let's model what Jesus told us to model. Let's look like Jesus, and we will make a difference. And Jesus called us not to make a point, but to make a difference.